Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming out. I'm JBL, here with my best friends, Tim Miller, Sarah Longwell.
Is that a Greg Maddux jersey?
It'll all get, no, it's Maddux's brother, who is a pitching coach for the Nationals. Hmm. Game used.
Interesting.
Yeah, you like that? So we got a big debate coming, June 27th on CNN. Jake Tapper, and who else?
Dana Bash.
I feel like I need like the flop sweat emoji here, because on the one hand, I'm like, okay, good. So the Biden campaign is interested in doing something. They recognize that things are not great, Bob. On the other hand, you know, like, always get a little heart in her hands when Uncle Joe gets up to talk, right?
I don't know. You think he's doing great. You think he's the best president of our lifetime.
I mean, he is, just objectively.
You guys, don't encourage him.
Yeah. It's Biden, Reagan, and George H.W. Bush, right there, all crossing the finish line at the same time.
Such a specific bulwark crowd to like those three people.
Oh, God. Only at the bulwark, when I ask people to rank the presidents of like the last 40 years, would we get overwhelming consensus that George H.W. Bush was the best president of people's lifetimes. So I guess I will start with you, Timothy.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this? What is your panic level?
I'm bringing brown paper. Yeah. I got a brown paper bag with me at all times for the next 6 months. He had to do it. He had to do it. There were some people, I think there were even some bulwark people. I don't remember if it was you or not. There were some people that thought that he could skip the debates, and he had no choice but to do these debates. Like, if he had not debated Donald Trump and let Donald Trump mock him for being a dementia-riddled old man who can't debate, like, we all might as well just packed up and started moving to Uruguay right now, because, the thing was going to be over. Like, he had no choice but to do it. So I'm happy they did it. I'm happy they did it from an offensive posture. Right, because you can imagine a different way where Trump finishes the trial, he gets convicted, gets his ankle bracelet, then just starts trolling Joe Biden constantly, and he does it kind of defensively. So I like that he's kind of set the terms. I like that the first one's June 27th, so, you know, if things don't go so great, we got some time to make it back up. I like that. I think that was a good idea. I also think it was a good idea. This is the longest campaign ever. And so I think doing it earlier than traditionally also made a lot of sense for Biden for that reason. I was doing something else the other day, and we're live Googling, and we're like, when did Hillary concede? And it was like June. You know, the 2008 Democratic primary was still going right now at this point, in 2008. And this general election has been going on for 3 years already, essentially. So I think it was good to do it early, and you know, we'll have plenty of time to do pregame analysis of it, but just whether to do or not to do, I think we landed in the right place.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I was not surprised that this happened right when it happened, because that Seattle New York Times poll came out, and then he very quickly pivoted into like debate me bro mode. Like, we're not even going to have the commission, we just need to debate. And that seemed like a real move to say, like, we've got to change the narrative, we've got to do something to shake this up. And I do think, I also thought the date was interesting and good, not just because he'll have time to make, because there is a history of sitting presidents having terrible first debates.
Yes.
Like, Obama had a really bad first debate.
Yes.
And
Trump
had a really bad first debate. And so it's not a great track record there. But like, doing it in June, if it comes off of a conviction, right? So like, let's say that the conviction, let's say George Conway's right, and if you can't tell, I do think that George...
Yahweh.
I think George maybe tries to... I think George does a lot of like manifesting what he wants to happen, and that's fine. JBL's been working on me too long, and so I have more to... I just can't let myself think that something's going to bail us out like that. But let's say he does get convicted. The idea that he would get convicted, like, post-Labor Day-ish, and then go into a debate, and Biden gets his B12 shot. We see, you know, we see the guy Prevagen. That gave Prevagen. We see the guy that we saw at the State of the Union, right? And he comes out strong. And because the thing for Biden is, like, the bar, fairly or unfairly, is, like, corpse. Right? Like, the bar is just, they've let, the and Trump team yeah. does this on, like, and I always think it's a little bit of a mistake, is that they say this guy, you know, they're spoon-feeding him oatmeal in the White House and, like, Weekend at Bernie-ing him. And if he comes out and he owns Trump, like, and so much of this is going to come down to Biden, which is why I think it's nerve-wracking, because you do see him shuffling around and, you know, but he does have, he does sometimes show up amped up in a way that works, and Trump is not great either. Like, for all of George's sort of, he's nuts and, you know, you make him nuts or crazy, he did come out of that first debate last time. Now, granted, I think he had COVID and was yeah. trying to give Biden COVID.
Yeah.
But, like,
well, a non-traditional strategy.
That's right. It's like, although, I don't know, they might just be trying to kill each other this time. Like, but they're, That was what he was trying to do that last time, right? He like, Trump came out really amped up and instead looked like a lunatic. Like, everybody was like, what is going on with this guy? And so if Biden's able to handle him, and Biden has to show that he can handle him. And if he can, I do think coming off the conviction, he taunts him with, hey, you're a convicted felon. Maybe you get a shift in the dynamic of the race, because the dynamic's been very locked in, which is why we're all so nervous. Nothing's moving.
One other inside baseball shout out to Biden, the Biden team, is if they manage to save our democracy, they also will have killed the Iowa caucuses and the Presidential Debate Commission, which
yeah.
both of those things needed to be put out to pasture.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so that'd be a pretty good track record.
Bill Kristol's not here, right? No.
No, he's in Greece.
I'll just say this. He was watching the site of Sisyphus' rock.
If things are really bad at the June debate, there's still time to make a change on the ticket, right? I kid because I love Bill. Okay, so things that I think are smart here, that they've excluded RFK. That's good, right?
Yeah.
Keep him off the stage. No audience. Very
no
good.
No audience, good.
I did have an encouraging private source from, I call all my Democratic friends, like, tell me the polls are a little bit better than your secret polls you're not telling anything about, and the news isn't that great there, because they never tell me anything good, except for one thing, which is that the RFK numbers are totally artificial in the media polls,
yeah,
which makes sense.
I wrote about that like 2 months ago, but that's cool.
I like to see data.
It's funny,
you know?
I missed that.
Oh, we're playing the hits tonight. No Fox, automatic cutoff on the microphones. I like that.
I don't. Can I have a contrary? I know everybody liked it, so I'm going to go against the crowd. We kind of want to let Trump ramble, I think. I think you want Trump to seem crazy.
Yeah, you
crazier
know what looks crazy?
He seems, the better.
An impotent man like this with his... with his mic cut off, that's what looks crazy.
Okay, well.
That's a convincing answer.
As long as we're dreamcasting, that's fine.
Just saying. Okay, so we had a big vote in Maryland last night. Did anybody here vote against Bethany Mandel? You're
thank
a great
you.
American.
Yeah, we'll buy you a drink after.
Oh, thank you. So let's dream with me. 20% of the Republicans showed up to vote against Donald Trump in a meaningless race. Tim, tell me that there's something in there that you like.
It is. It's like the only thing that I've liked in about a week and a half, besides some of the economic news, which we'll get to. But because I've been, I think, the biggest skeptic in among the, you know, never Trumper resistance crowd about the Nikki Haley vote in these primaries, because I do think in a lot of places, like, I was really spooked by the guy who was interviewed by MSNBC who had crossed over to vote for Nikki Haley in one of these primaries, and they're like, oh, why did you decide to do that? And he said, I heard that guy Clough on MSNBC tell me that we should do this. And I was like, that guy's not a Trump voter crossing over. So like, I just have been worried about the makeup of these voters.
This is a closed primary.
But this is a closed primary, and there's the competitive also Brooks versus Trone race, which we'll get to. So you would think, I mean, you have to be a real sicko to be a Democrat, who's like, I actually don't want to choose a preference in my own party's Senate race. Instead, I'm going to cross over to vote for Nikki Haley. So that, you know, there are probably three or four sickos out there that did that, but I do think this is a pretty straight, like, political science test. And it's about 1 in 5 in the party that went against him. And so I do think that's encouraging.
So I always take this position that it's encouraging. I will say last night...
You're flipping?
I'm just going to tell you another stat that's just... less encouraging, which is that Trump got 80% of the Republican vote. Larry Hogan got like 62%.
Yeah, 68, I think. But that's still...
No, 62.
Trump.
Oh, 62?
Yeah.
62. Good memory.
But the point is Trump wildly outperformed Hogan in the Republican primary.
What's wrong with that?
What does that tell you?
It just hurts your feelings.
Yeah, I guess that's it. It makes me sad. Yeah.
It doesn't say anything necessarily about the state that like the types of voters, the Nikki Haley types of voters are real though and gettable for Joe Biden.
I don't know that they matter in. They obviously don't matter in Maryland, but I do think the fact that it has been almost 20% across the board in these closed primaries in a bunch of states and in states where it does matter, because in a place like Pennsylvania. The Nikki Haley vote amounted to like 158,000 votes. That is far more than the margin.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I mean, some of those people are going to come home. Some of those people are already voting for Joe Biden. But like, that's the playing field. That's who you're trying to win.
Yeah.
The other thing from last night, Angela Alsobrooks beat David Trone, which shocked all the listeners of the focus group. I got a question about this. I want to unpack slightly what you said with Michael Steele this weekend. You said, oh, it really pulls at me. I don't know who I would vote for. Would I vote for Larry Hogan, Saint Larry? Or would
I've never
I vote
felt
for
like such
Democrat?
such a Gentile three than right now here at the synagogue. You know, like it really all of our Catholic references are really like sticking out like a sore thumb.
All people of the book, Timothy.
Yeah.
So where are you on this?
First of all,
why don't we all three say it at the same time? We'll go 1, 2, 3. So you know, so Sarah isn't nervous. Who would you vote for? Angela Alsobrooks versus Larry Hogan. 1, 2, 3. I don't know.
Alsobrooks.
Hogan.
Okay. I'm in the middle as usual.
I'm not sure, but hold on. In defense of the Focus Group podcast, really quickly, just so we did a bunch of Hogan for Governor Biden voters in Maryland and asked them who they were going to vote for in the primary, the Democratic primary, and Trone was kind of running away from it in this group. But that makes sense if you listen to who he screened for. These were already the super mods, right? They're people who voted for Hogan for, and Hogan, I was much more interested in that podcast, we were trying to figure out, like, can Hogan win this race? And the only, look, I would vote for Hogan in a heartbeat in normal times. He's, like, my favorite Republican. And if Trump wasn't the nominee, the fact that Trump's the nominee and the fact that you are giving him an extra Republican sits very badly unless we're sure. So, like, who were you that you were, like, you said you were worried he'd be Ben Sasse?
Right. Yeah.
Or did you say that? So, like, no, that's the question. Yeah. The question is
you can't
what kind
reference
of senator?
Things we said in the green room and expect them to follow along.
Yeah. Sorry. Is he going to be Ben Sasse or is he going to be Liz Cheney?
The 30-second thing. So I said if I could be sure that Larry Hogan would be Mitt Romney, then I could vote for him because it's very, very useful to have a guy like Mitt Romney who can trust to do the right things on the big issues and don't you go hissing Pierre Delecto. No, don't you bring that in here. It's important to have a guy like that it is much more important to have a Republican who will vote to impeach than it is to have a Democrat who will vote to impeach. The problem is I don't trust Larry Hogan as far as I can throw him. And I look at that guy, and I don't see Mitt Romney, I see Ben Sasse. And maybe I'm wrong. Like Ben Sasse a lot as a human being. Great guy, can't trust him. But this is
This is a genuine conflict.
Yeah.
Because I've been let down by every single Republican.
Not Liz Cheney.
Except for Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger like a couple people. Yeah. And so I don't put a lot of faith in it. And I heard somebody just shouted judges up here. And I think for people who are straight Democrats, there's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want Larry Hogan. But even me, the thing about having Larry Hogan is it is good to have a Republican fighting Donald Trump. It is good to have a Republican in the Senate who maybe joins up with Murkowski and Collins, and they build a coalition of people who are resistant to Trump. And I get it, that's Sarah being too optimistic about the Republican Party. I get it.
Yeah. It would just be healthy. Look, having a Republican mansion would be healthy. Annoying all the Republicans. That is what I have in my positive column for Larry Hogan, as I'm an undecided swing voter in this Senate race, though I live in Louisiana, so my vote doesn't matter. But I'm hoping that Larry will come on the Bulwark podcast. Hopefully he will, and I'm going to tell him the questions I'm going to ask him right now so he can prep, because I am curious about this. What would you have done about the stolen Supreme Court seat? Like, would you have gone along with all three seats? Would you have gone along with Mitch? Because that's my question on the judges. Like, obviously he would have voted for the person that Trump nominated, but would you have gone along with the gambit, to block Merrick Garland? Because if so, then that would be a no for me. Then what would you have done on impeachment one? What would you have done on impeachment two? And so then we just know. So, I mean, if Larry Hogan said to me, I would have pushed through Merrick Garland, I would have voted to convict him twice. Then it's kind of interesting. Then I'm intrigued. Color me intrigued by.
And
by
he's going to run, I think, as a very anti-Trump Republican. Yeah. In this, that's the only way for him to win in Maryland.
I think that also Brooks is in much better shape than people think, though. Yeah. At the end of the day, these Senate races just become very. Susan Collins is literally the only one that has broken the mold, and so I think that's good news for Angela Alsobrooks. Brooks. Good news for the fact that we barely have any black women in the United States Senate. I do think it's bad news though for John Tester and Sherrod Brown.
Yeah. Can I say one, it's sort of a silver lining, which is Dave Trone spent how much money?
40?
60.
60.
60 million of his own dollars.
62. Thank you up there. Yeah. Media monitor.
Phone a friend. And he still lost, right? When we were doing the focus groups, I mean, his name ID was just through the roof. Everybody knew who he was. I live in Maryland, and so you couldn't watch a video for your kid without seeing his Dave Trone loves teachers, and it wasn't enough. And so
consultants are so mad at me right now because I did a tweet yesterday that the Dave Trone and Ron DeSantis campaigns proved that political consultants are basically a scam, and that TV ads are almost worthless, outside of a few exceptions.
You mean
there are exceptions.
Republican voters against
there
Trump?
There are some exceptions. Republican voters against Trump makes sense. If we, I said Catherine Cortez Masto spent $50 million more to win by 1,000 votes. That was probably worth it. But most of the time, this stuff's worthless.
I disagree.
Great.
I think the
you,
problem
can I send all the mad political consultants to you?
No, the problem is that money can't overcome a bad candidate.
Sure.
Right, the people who spend the most are always guys like Steve Forbes, yeah. Ron DeSantis, Dave. If your candidate is terrible, all the money in the world doesn't matter. But in median races, right?
Sure.
Having the money matters.
Can I just tell a quick Trone story? So I met him one time.
In a Total Wine?
Yeah, no, not in a Total Wine, but
rolling your little cart through.
No, but it was at an alcohol industry event. Yeah. And I knew somebody who worked for him, and I said hello to him and said, oh, my friend so-and-so works for you. And he was like, oh, yeah, she's great. He's like, I love promoting women. And I was like, ew. who says that? And it was just you could just see him all over the campaign trail being like, I'm really good for minorities. I'm super great with women. He was just... It's probably good he lost.
Does he have binders?
What?
Does he have binders?
I don't know if he had binders.
All of them?
Mitt is just taking strays all over this podcast.
We're moving on because Mitt Romney today gave an exclusive interview to, I think it was MS.
Stephanie Rule. It was last night. It was the 11th hour last night. You missed it. You were watching the Nuggets. Just beautiful performance against the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Mitt Romney now thinks Joe Biden should have pardoned Trump preemptively. Where have I heard that before?
Ooh, you can hiss. You can hiss.
Well, what do you guys think? You guys love Mitt Romney. You love bipartisanship. Where's your God now, Sarah?
What is Mitt talking about? This is, first of all, it's federal. Like, he couldn't have pardoned him on this.
Okay,
this is not.
Let me read the quote.
Yeah.
So that you know. Again, I'm not trying to dunk on Mitt because I really do like the guy. He should have fought like crazy to keep this prosecution from going forward. What would we normally call the President of the United States reaching down to a random municipality and trying to pressure the prosecutor not to prosecute somebody he believes has convicted a crime? We would call that corruption. That would be horrible, right?
Weren't we upset about Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch
having a hang on the tarmac?
I am a proponent of having had Biden pardon Trump on the federal crime, but to say that he should go down and should have like put the screws to Alvin Bragg, I don't think Mitt thought that one out.
I don't think he thought it out either. I think, look, Mitt is it's coming from a good place. It's coming from a healthy place. So here's the thing. There's this conventional wisdom that these court cases are helping Trump. I don't think that's true. I think it's wrong. You hear a lot of pundits saying it. It's because they still have sort of a primary mentality where the cases were absolutely helping Trump in the primary because the Republican Party likes their candidates super corrupt right now. And so the fact that he was being indicted all over the place, you know, they were able to sort of exercise their grievance around two-tier justice system. But going forward in the general, like, here's the thing. The margins are so narrow. And so if you told me if Trump is convicted in this Stormy Daniels case, that it was going to move 2,000 voters in Arizona, I would be like, worth it. Good. You know, 10,000 voters. Because it is a small percentage of people who are going to move over something like this, but it is not. This idea that it helps him, that it's a win-win for Trump, which is what Romney was saying. He was saying that this is good for Trump. And he's wrong about that. And he's also wrong on, like, the merits of accountability. And Mitt Romney knows this. I think if...
No. No. Missy, here's the thing. Mitt is a nice man, and he drinks milk. And that's great. But, like, he doesn't know. He doesn't... To steal a line from the kids, he doesn't know what time it is. Okay? Mitt doesn't know what time it is, and he also doesn't know how to win. Like, I mean, Mitt let Obama kick his ass.
He doesn't know what?
He doesn't know how to win.
Oh.
Like, he's not... Like, this is... We're in a war against this fucking guy, and this guy committed a lot of crimes, and he should be held accountable for his fucking crimes. And it was nice that Mitt Romney voted twice to convict him, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate his service, but, like, he shouldn't be leading the army, okay? Like, he should... He did his role in voting to convict, and this is just... It's naive. It's naive.
Why are you giving me a hard time? You think people should pardon Trump. This is your line.
I mean, this was my line, yeah. I thought it would have been helpful to pardon.
It's weird. He, like, does yoga once, and he gets in this zen, like, space, and then all of a sudden, JBL gets very, like, yeah, Mike Pence is a real gift to our country. Like, you've just got a real couple of weird bangers.
Was your plan?
Name me a vice president who did a greater service to his country while in office. Can't do it, because Mike Pence is the best.
Hannibal Hamlin. Are you Look up that Hannibal. It was pretty good. Lincoln's first VP. His second VP, not so good. That was a black mark. If we're ranking the presidents, that's an L on the Lincoln ledger. Were we doing a deal? I guess you could sell me in a deal. Like, if we pardoned him in exchange for him, like, moving to Morocco or something.
Elba.
Yeah. Like, if you, like, moved to Saudi Arabia in exchange for a
pardon.
Yeah, if
you pardoned him so that Trump... And Trump said, I won't run...
Was that what you were
that's
for?
That's a good deal.
Nah, I think just pardoning him makes him look weak.
No.
I'm sorry,
no.
What?
I think having pardoned Trump made him look weak.
No.
He had to accept the grace
that
the strong man Joe Biden was offering him.
You don't understand who you're dealing with.
I don't know. All right, let's move on to the bad stuff, because I don't want to send you guys out happy. So I want to dig into that New York Times poll.
All right.
What's the gif with Jack Nicholson where he's like, yes? I want to read you two cross tabs.
Mm.
How satisfied are you with the way things are going in your life these days. Not at all satisfied, 11%. Not too satisfied, 11%. Somewhat satisfied, 38%. Very satisfied, 36%. That sounds pretty good. Okay, same voters.
74 to 22. I'm doing quick math good. Up here.
Thinking about the nation's economy, how do you rate economic conditions? Excellent, 3%. Good, 18%. Only fair, 27%. Poor, 51%. Flat majority. All right, that's the first setup. Now I'm going to read to you from the New York Times piece about all this. This is the Times. More typical was Chris Myers, a 52-year-old union construction worker in Hartford, Wisconsin. Mr. Myers said that he had never seen more construction work than what was underway now in the state. In fact, he said that he was helping to build the $3 billion Microsoft Artificial Intelligence data center that Mr. Biden was trumpeting on Wednesday in Wisconsin as a promise delivered by his administration.
He sounds like a good guy.
Yet Mr. Myers said he would split his vote by supporting Ms. Baldwin, whom he praised for doing good things for the state, and Mr. Trump, saying, I like his go-get-em, take-no-crap attitude.
This is in Wisconsin.
Mainly.
We're in Wisconsin.
Mainly, Mr. Myers complained that Mr. Biden's visit last week celebrating the creation of Mr. Myers' job ended up slowing down the concrete trucks.
There's a photo of him as well.
Well, because the New York Times has to go and get portraits of every single Trump supporter in America.
It's a beautiful photo. He's like in a, you know, white collared shirt and sneakers.
His
chinos. He's leaning up against what seems to be like an elevated deck outside a beautiful home.
It's great. So how do I can't curse because we're in a house of God. How the fork do we get out of this? Because I look at this and what I think is nothing matters. None of this makes sense. We're all dead. Sarah?
I don't have to tell you, man. Joe Biden's old. And that's a real problem for people.
The concrete trucks, though? What about the concrete trucks?
I don't know how to explain. JVL does this where he makes me, like, defend every voter who says a boneheaded thing.
This is a bipartisan guy. He's going to
vote. And he's voting for Tammy Baldwin. Yeah. I will just tell you, as a matter of political analysis, this is interesting. The fact that right now the number of, like, Baldwin Trump voters, the number of tester Trump voters. I actually, weirdly, am getting more optimistic about the Senate and these House races and these ticket splitters who are going to vote for their own hometowns or Democrats that they think are doing, what was the line there, some good things for the state.
Some good things for the state, yeah.
But are going to vote for Trump because they want to vote for Trump.
Well, he tells
Where
it like
are you
it
on the question of, see, because my reaction to this, which I think could be wrong, and because it's not really based in like my old political strategist hat. It's based in my content creator, like emotional reaction to this is, fuck this guy, fuck these people. It's like, we are at an all-time high in the stock market. This guy's his union pension and 401k is all higher than it's ever been. Like his life is great.
Oh yeah,
obviously today.
Highs in the NASDAQ and the Dow.
And the S&P 500, all-time highs.
All-time.
Unemployment's at a record stretch of low. Like, he has no problems finding a job. And it's like he's going to go back to Trump because he likes the cut of his jib. Fuck him. Joe Biden should go out there and just start doing Morning in America.
Okay, well, good.
That's my question.
Win an election by saying fuck that guy.
No, but does he go? I know. I'm saying fuck that guy. So then my answer to fuck that guy is that Joe Biden should go out and be like, okay, it's Morning in America. Like, maybe we switch. Maybe we stop the whole, oh, I'm rending my garments. I know it's tough out there. I know that the butter is up to $6 this week for some reason. I don't know why butter is higher than milk, but butter is on the way up. We saw in the report today. So that's kind of a lot of the smarties, you know, on TV, which you are now, say, like, you got to acknowledge their pain. But is that right?
No,
is that right, though? Or is it like, no, things
listen,
are great?
Look, people don't like to hear it, and you don't always like to hear it, but, like, Joe Biden's not a good communicator. He's not inspiring confidence in people. He should be able to go out right now and say, Donald Trump drove the economy into a ditch during COVID. Supply chains flatlined. His mismanagement put us in this hole. I came in. Nobody's locked in their houses anymore. We're out there. We have the best economic recovery of any other country, and we're not all the way there yet, but we're gonna get there, and that's why you need me for another term. But he can't do it.
You could do an ad like that. We could cut ads like that.
He could and they should, and I've said this to every Democrat who will listen to me. Listen, when Donald Trump, when he was president, he just ran around being like, hey, best economy for black people, best economy for women, hey buddy, how's your 401k? And everybody else just repeated it. Like, to the extent that our political system is currently running off vibes, I may hate that as a person who would like it to be running off facts and information, it's gonna run off vibes, then you gotta play vibes. Yeah. And you can't shuffle around and be like, yeah, I feel your pain, I'm sorry butter's so expensive. You gotta be like, I don't know, eat less butter, use margarine, it's probably good, better for you, I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, you gotta find a way to push into the positive, and it can't all be paid ads. I'm sorry, people are gonna evaluate these two men, ultimately. They are. And if Trump comes in with big lunatic energy, and that's fine. George Conway can say he's nuts all he wants, and like, obviously I agree that he's nuts. I also think that people, it's in all the polling, it's in all the focus groups, they feel like he is more with it, they feel like he's more competent, and because he has big lunatic energy, they just think he's more like energized, and he energizes them. And it is scary, but like, this is why, okay, we're in the courts this week, and I watch Burgum and Vivek Ramaswamy, like every Republican is rushing to be a surrogate for Donald Trump while he's in a hush money porn star trial case. Joe Biden is the president of the United States and he can't get a governor to come out and say nice things about him. This is an asymmetric messaging problem and it is deep and it is persistent and it, like, that's the ball game. If these guys don't try to turn around this narrative, and that's why, like, he's got a surrogate game. It's in court with him. Like, he can have a gag order and a bunch of people will show up to talk for him. You don't see a million Democrats coming out to make a positive.
They'll say, I'll just give them the defense. They'll be like, sure, yeah, we do. I go out, and they're like, you know, Democrats are on TV from time to time, and we'll say that the economy's getting better and things are getting better, but nobody, it doesn't break through. Because, you know, Jamie Raskin being on TV saying, did you see the S&P 500 today?
That's because they sit
that
there and they go like this.
Match.
The S&P is up 500 points, and like, whatever. They don't speak in a way that makes people feel like they believe it, that makes people feel like they should be saying, it's a miracle how Joe Biden turned this economy around. It's a miracle that we are leading every other industrialized country post-COVID in our economic recovery. But you don't hear anybody making that case. You hear what, because I talk to the same people you do, and they sit there like this, but you can't tell people that, you know, they're not, the butter's not expensive. Well, don't tell them butter's not expensive. Say you're working on it.
Yeah.
But that, like, you've done a lot already.
I just worry, Mona and I talked about this a little bit this week on her show. I just worry that when you look at the signals suggest such total irrationality that the answer, I think, is just that people want Trump.
No.
They just want
Trump
again. And you can't argue people. It's like arguing somebody out of ordering rum raisin ice cream. You'd say, that's disgusting. Why would you have it? And they're like, I want rum raisin tonight. I'm sorry, I'm going to 31 flavors and I'm getting rum raisin in my boat, you know? And like, what do you, this guy,
he kind of has a rum raisin face now.
He's going to vote against Joe Biden because Biden held up traffic. That's his reason. I don't think going out and giving the
it's not his reason. It's just the reason that came to mind because it was the most recent thing he thought of.
Because he's a flipping goldfish. Right? I mean, these people, why are we even saving the country for them? How many, you know, like, how many times do we have to clean it up? Why are you just going to break it again? We can't.
I got to do it every single time. Do you know what democracy is? It's made up of these people.
Yeah, they're bad.
Can we fix that?
I I think so.
It's called autocracy.
Can I just tell you, as part of the pro-democracy movement, I think we can dial back a little bit of the democracy. And I'm like, I tell pro-democracy activists this all the time. We don't need to be doing all this voter registration. Okay. It's like, you look at the numbers out there, and it's like the most conscientious, engaged people, they get it. They're going for Joe Biden bigly. So like, maybe they could just vote this time. We don't need record turnout. I'm not saying voter suppression. I'm not saying voter suppression, just like, you know, maybe a little less voter activation. That's all I'm saying.
You know, I don't agree with that. But I was at an event last week. It's where they gave me this cold, and we got asked our most unpopular opinion.
People are the silent killer.
Yeah. Our most unpopular political opinion, of which I have so many, I discovered when given this prompt. But for this group, my most unpopular opinion was high turnout elections are actually bad for democracy. I was in the Czech Republic shortly after the Velvet Revolution, or not shortly after, but a while after, and I was talking to the senator there, and she said, I knew that our democracy was stable when fewer people were voting.
Yeah.
Because we've had the highest turnout elections in our history, and it is not because we're doing great, right? It's because people feel scared that they feel like they need to vote on high alert. And so I don't agree with the way you put it, but I do agree that lower turnout might actually suggest we're getting to a healthier place.
Here's the real reality. I think that you gave a good pitch right there, and I think that Joe Biden should have you open forum in Harrisburg or wherever you're from, and you can do that pitch. But, like, I think the real answer is that it doesn't matter, and I know you agree with this, and it has to be just Trump disqualification. Like, it really needs to be just that we need 6 months of scorched earth Trump disqualification. And I keep going back to, like, my model in my mind's eye whenever I read these stupid polls is Macron. Like, Macron's approval rating was worse than Biden's. It was like 22. And everybody was panicking. It was like right at the autocratic moment. And Le Pen was going to win. And Le Pen ends up not winning. And it was why? And it was like, because in the very end, everybody is just like, she crazy. There are just enough people that are like, she crazy. I'm not so sure about the little guy with the wife.
Sacre bleu!
Not so sure about him. He seems a little, but like, it's better. It's stable. And I'm like, we're in the ballpark for being able to do that. We're in the ballpark. I think that there's a group of people that aren't taking it quite seriously yet.
Yeah, wait, can I just...
I'm still nervous as balls, though.
Go ahead.
Because I also think Biden's going to win. Like, I do think that. That's nice that you're going to clap just because I think it. I am not predictive of anything. Have I told you guys about my 5 stages of grief theory? Have we talked about this yet? I'm going to make you listen to it again real quick. Just, I do think that the voters have been going through this process, right, where, like, denial, like, it can't be these two again. No way we're getting these two guys again. And then... anger, and it's like, Joe Biden's got a 32% approval rating. Like, I cannot believe this guy's running again. I'm so pissed about it. And then the bargaining is like the third party stuff, like no labels, and maybe there's an alternative. And now we're in depression. Like, right now, we're in depression. And I don't know.
I'm resonating.
Yeah, this feels right to you, right? And I think post-convention, because people still think this. I mean, I hear it all the time in the focus groups where people are like, well, maybe it won't be Joe Biden, right? Like, maybe they're going to...
Trump just said that yesterday.
Yeah, they're like, it might not be him. They're going to swap
Trump
somebody out
the
convention.
Trump did some podcast, and he was asked about this, and Trump said, yeah, I still don't think it's going to be Biden.
Yeah.
What?
Okay, well, so people still think that, and so at some point, we're going to reach acceptance. And I do think... when I talk a lot about how the swing voting group this time is the double haters, or the double doubters, the pox on both their housers. But double haters isn't quite right. Because they don't actually hate Joe Biden. They don't like Joe Biden. They don't connect with Joe Biden. They don't think Joe Biden is inspiring to them. But they don't hate him. And they do hate Donald Trump. And it is why this is going to be one of the most depressing election cycles we've ever been through. Because we always do fear and anger. We always do negative partisanship. We always try to swift boat the other person. But this time, it is a pure... how do you make them hate and fear the other guy more? And at the end of the day, I think we can do that with Trump, because I think it's true of Trump, and people know that.
And the swift boat guy is literally running Trump's campaign. I feel like that's underappreciated, that Chris LaCivita was like the strategist for the Swift boat for Veterans for Truth. Yeah, no, people don't cover that. So yeah, so that's what's going to happen. It's got to go both ways. What stage in the stage of grief is it when you start like envisioning what your daily podcast is going to look like in the second Trump term and you have blackout curtains all around you? Because I was starting to think about that earlier this week. What stage am I in? That's a personal question.
Yeah, I think you're through the stages
okay.
on the other side
all right,
or something.
Okay, all right. Well, I need to get a new therapist.
I want to push back against this a little bit, Sarah. You're proposing that if you could only show the people what they're voting for, then the scales would fall from their eyes and they would say, oh, I had no idea this guy was a racist. I didn't know he was crazy. I said this somewhere else. He is not running with a mask on. He is
kind
not
of he
Bob
is.
Roberts.
Technically, he's running with a mask on.
It's a very bronze mask. But he's not hiding it. He's not. Yeah. The crazy is his selling point. He's telling people, I will be your retribution. I will be a dictator. Yes, we're going to have to investigate Joe Biden and put his crime family in jail. It is not the case. I don't think you can disqualify somebody when he is taking all those things you're saying about him, like, oh, but he's a crazy person who wants to sow chaos and you know, overturn democracy, when 46 to 48% of the country is saying, oh, I want that.
Oh, I'm glad that you decided to fight about this. This is a good fight for us to have. All right, and I'm going to do it by saying a totally...
Thanks, best friend.
Yeah. We have a podcast every Friday where we fight about these things. It's fine. I'm going to do it by talking about something completely different, and then I'm going to get back to it, I promise.
Okay.
So, abortion's obviously going to be a major issue in this election cycle, and oftentimes people ask about, like, how is abortion going to impact things? And one of the things I always say to people is, look, in the focus groups, we always start them by saying, how do you think things are going in the country? You know, what are you worried about, or what are you optimistic about? And everybody talks about the economy, immigration, crime. Very rarely do they bring up abortion. Very rarely. But if you ask about abortion, they get incredibly animated. I don't know if anybody listened to the Focus Group podcast and we did the Arizona women, but we had 2-time Trump voting women, and we were talking about abortion. 3 of the women in the group had abortions, and one had had a catastrophic health event that had made her think that like they were going to put her in a position of choosing her life or the baby's life. The salience of something matters a great deal. How top of mind is something for you, and how much does it make you feel like emotionally, right? And so one of the things in 2022 that people started to worry about toward the end of the campaign, they worried that they'd spent too much time talking about abortion and not enough time on other issues, right? Right around when they thought the red wave was coming. And I was always like, I don't think so. And the reason I didn't think so was if you don't keep abortion top of mind, people don't think about it. But if it is top of mind, they feel deeply emotional and connected to it. And I feel the same way about Donald Trump, which is if you let him recede into the background, if you keep him locked up in court on a case that makes you look backwards.
Like Hannibal Lecter.
Where you're looking backward, it allows people to just sort of be like, whatever. The reason that the conviction and the debate is so important is like Trump has got to be back in people's faces. Because the crazy, I know what you're saying about like people kind of know these guys, but it is so much about like, do they remember that he's what a psychopath he is? Do they remember how unhinged he is? Because what do people remember about Trump's? Like they're doing this thing right now where it's like, I remember the economy was good. That's it. You've got to remind them who Trump is, and nobody better to do it but Trump. And so nice. My theory of the case has always been acceptance between the two, coupled with the fact that Trump comes back into a high salience position where he is in people's faces, he is talking directly to them, and they are confronted with the idea of like, I don't know why people don't ask this poll question. Like, I think if you asked it, with everything at stake, that's at stake, with the stakes as high as they are, push comes to shove, gun to your head, would you vote for Joe Biden or Donald Trump? Because when you are in a focus group and you ask people, like, are you excited about Joe Biden? Are you glad he's running? Everyone's like, no. I mean, they're just so depressed about it. But when you get them to the end and you're like, you're forced to choose Joe Biden, Donald Trump, the elections tomorrow, they get there. And I think like that's what's just gonna have to happen.
Great. That's great. How do we feel about Nebraska 2?
There's not enough polling on Nebraska 2.
I was looking at my map the other day.
Okay, before, because we're starting to run long.
We're not running long.
Does anybody here know, is Cliff Astness, does that name ring a bell to anyone?
This is for us. No one cares about
Cliff
Astness.
Not a single person knows about Cliff Astness? That's great. We're going to educate you about one of America's greatest financiers. You want me to take off?
Please.
I got in a little trouble this week. I don't know if you guys know. I got in a little trouble because, I don't want to get struck down. But there are some people in our old world who are very unhappy with Joe Biden this week because he would not give Israel one bomb. Sorry, he wouldn't give Israel one bomb. And some of these people who claim to be never Trumpers and claim to be anti-Biden said that that claim to be anti-Trump said that that was the last straw for them. They're abandoning Joe Biden, and we'll see what happens in November. One such person was Cliff Astness. Now, he once called me, what was it?
Would you like to?
He called me a whiny bitch. What did he call me? No, a whore. He called me a whore.
Oh.
He called me a whore.
Wow.
A whiny whore or just a whore?
He called me weak and gay. No, that was a Secretary of State candidate in Missouri. Anyway.
Just make friends everywhere you go.
He called me a whore. Anyway, he popped this off here last week. Okay, I hope to have a lot of street cred here. I tried very hard to get us better choices in the upcoming election. Hashtag still team Nikki. But this feckless tool of the far left now selling out Israel, which is doing what any responsible country would have to do, most would do far, far worse, is beyond tolerable. I hope Dearborn and the loyalty of spoiled, stupid, malevolent brats are worth it, Joe, because now I'm moving to the unthinkable. Hashtag Trump 2024. I'm going to fucking kill somebody this year, JVL. I just have to tell you, like, the rage in my body is just uncontrollable sometimes. And I'm, like, doing my very best to do it. I'm trying these Louie beverages that are just a little bit of THC. And it's not working. And I'm not right now, not currently, but, you know, it's a general practice. And, like, the lack of seriousness, he calls the people on the young people on campus that are, you know, protesting based on their beliefs. He's calling them spoiled, malevolent brats, and whatever you think about them. Like, these people are the spoiled, malevolent brats. Like, this is crazy. This is crazy to me. They, like, I honestly have more respect for Steve Bannon than these people. Like, at least that person has the courage of his convictions.
Yeah, I mean,
at least he believes something. Okay, these people see Donald Trump for the threat he is. They see what he's going to do to our country, and they're like they're threatening us that we're going to withhold our vote for Joe Biden because Joe Biden won't do every single thing that I want them to do. And it's like, that is a childish view. All right, nobody gets a president, maybe besides you, besides maybe three people here, nobody gets a president that does every single thing that they want them to do. You know, I had a long conversation with Dan Savage about this, and Dan was like, I had to vote for anti-gay marriage candidates my whole damn life, like, to get to where we were, and I just did it. I sucked it up. You voted for the better person. Like, that is the nature of our system. And so I attacked Cliff and some other people like that, and everybody got very upset at me over this. They're like, I'm unserious. I'm the baby because, you know, I don't understand the high-minded view of looking at Joe Biden and looking at Donald Trump and saying, I don't know, whatever. Six one way, half dozen the other. You know, one guy tried a coup, the other guy is denying Israel one bomb.
At this point, I raise a practical question.
What's that?
What does never mean?
When did he go British on
this? It's Nigel Tufnell from Spinal Tap, right?
What?
You guys remember this? They're doing Stonehenge. Yeah. At this point, I raise a practical question. We'll be performing Stonehenge tonight.
Spinal Tap 2 is coming out. We're taping it in New Orleans with friend of the pod, Rob Reiner.
What is never Trump? Are you really never Trump if you're Trump 2024?
I mean, this is an easily answerable question because we have seen a great many never Trumpers turn into maybe Trumpers and then Trumpers or anti-Trumpers. But everybody we knew in 2016 was a never Trumper. They were hashtagging never Trump all over the place. And they fell in line. I mean, there's only I mean, we fill out one little magazine of the Never Trumpers that really stuck with it.
Tim, you had Ross Douthat on. Certainly you guys have heard of Ross Douthat. You had Ross Douthat on the show.
That's not claims, who people.
You know, like,
surprise. No Ross Douthat fans here? Huh. Interesting.
What?
No Ross Douthat here, fans here. Who would have thought? I don't know. I thought it's a bright audience. New York Times.
He's too obsessed with Ross Douthat.
New York Times
reading. He
needs
to let the Ross Douthat thing go.
Look, the restraining order clearly says that I'm allowed to talk about him when I'm on stage.
Yeah.
Ross, who claims to be a never Trump stalwart, was on your show, and all he could do was talk about how great Trump's presidency is. And I'm just like, you don't sound like you're never Trump. You sound like you're itching to vote for him. And this is a big thing that's happening, I think. I think there is a splinter in the Never Trump movement. And that's why I wanted to talk about the Cliff Asness thing. Here's why. You know, Anne Applebaum, with her authoritarian playbook, talks about how it's all about exhaustion. They try to grind you down. And I think that's essentially what this is. I don't think this is this Joe Biden 2,000-pound bomb policy that pushed people over the edge. I think there is a tranche of people from our world who are exhausted by it all and just can't do it anymore, and they were going to get to this point anyway, because they're tapping out. They're done.
Well, then get to Joe Biden. What's wrong with Joe Biden? He's doing fine. We're at low unemployment. Nobody's life is a threat. There's not American carnage out there. Like, this is the thing that drives me the most insane. He's fine. He's fine. Like, things are okay.
He's great.
All of these people out there, their lives are fine. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are people forcing us through this? Sarah, you listen to the people. That is the thing that frustrates me the most. And, like, very smart, competent people, thoughtful people. I got in this public fight over this thing. And it's like, smart people are messaging me like, Tim, you got to be more sympathetic. You got to listen to them. People are upset. People are worried. I'm like, over what? It's not Vietnam. Our kids aren't going to war. It's not the Civil War. We don't have hyperinflation. It's not 1979. Like, why? We shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be here. We should be doing something else.
Look, I think it's fine for people to have big policy disagreements with Joe Biden.
Sure.
I think it's good. I think it's fine for them to have big policy disagreements over how Joe Biden's handling Israel. But he's obviously not on campus protesting, which is how these guys make him sound. I think that what's happening here, remember when all of a sudden everybody started calling every Democrat like a pedophile?
Groomer.
Groomers and pedophiles, that became a big thing. And you're like, why is this happening all of a sudden? Then you're like, you know why? Because what's worse than someone who does a coup? It's like, I gotta come up with a thing for somebody that's worse than someone who does a coup. And pedophile's all I got. That's like it. That's like the worst thing you can be after doing a coup. But here's the thing, right? This performative anger, it's about being like, I've gotta give an excuse for why I'm gonna do the thing that puts me on side with my tribe. And to do it, it has to be like so over the top angry, I have to act like this is such a big deal that it would, you know, negate the coup plotting and the constitution shredding and all of those things. And I think that that's why they come off as wild as they do, but they are able to hide behind a policy issue that is very important to sort of the remnant Republicans, which is support for Israel. And so the thing is that Joe Biden has been very supportive of
this
Israel.
This is what I'm saying.
No, I agree with you. But anything that to them looks like wavering provides them an opening to get on side with their tribe. That's all that's happening.
All right. I want to close here with what is my big global view of, I think, what's going on. The message of Trump is it's the message of the gangster, right? It is, look, if you just give me what I want, then everything will be okay. Right? It's a nice little democracy you got there. Nice little country you got there. Why would you cause trouble? Right? You know, you pay your protection money, you get to keep running your little gabagool place. And
did you say gabagool?
Gabagool. Gabagool. It's a thing we have up in New York City.
Yeah.
I saved myself there. Did you hear it? New York City. And I think a lot of people are exhausted by the fighting. and are finally willing to take that deal. And it, the essence of this is, someday I hope somebody cops to being the person to say it. The quote from the Washington Post, I think it was the Washington Post, right?
Yeah.
What's the harm of humoring him for this little bit longer, right? Because that, I mean, and that's honestly, that's the subtext of the entire Trump 2024 campaign to the rest of us. It is, look, you haven't been having any fun, have you? Like, this has been miserable the last 8 years. Don't worry, he can't run again. If you don't cause trouble, he'll get to be president again, he'll do what he wants, and then he'll go away. Everything will be okay. And I think that's
then we'll get Doug Burgum, the vice president.
But this is what I'm saying. This is the siren song of all of this. And there are a bunch of people who are going to fall for it and who are going to say, yeah, okay, I can't fight anymore. Let's just humor him this little while longer. And then we'll get our party back, right?
I've never heard you say this, but this is a great point.
I wrote it today.
I'm going to read that later. I will read it. I thought it was a brand new point, but it's a good one. It is a good one on there.
A couple hours ago. Come on, get off her back.
But this idea that like it's going to be long, and for a lot of the Never Trumpers who wanted to really stay with the party, they basically now are like, no, it's this all the way down. There is no coming back. Unless, of course, they get their fantasy, which is that Donald Trump picks Marco Rubio as his vice president, and then everybody just waits around for Trump, something terrible to happen to Trump so that they can have their, they took the long, circuitous way to getting the Marco Rubio presidency they always wanted.
Here's the problem. These guys are all too weak. You know, I would almost go along with the fantasy. It was like, we're going to pick Marco, and then we're going to get him in there, and then we're going to shove him. You know, then it's going to be like Brutus and Caesar, and then it's finally going to be done. I'd almost be like, I'm not for that, but props. But these guys are all too weak for that. They're not. We all know it. We've got to shiv them ourselves. We got to shiv them. And this is the only way. That's the only thing to do.
Yeah.
And by shiv, he means vote one time in your place, in your state.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but that's the point, is that we can't get exhausted.
Yeah.
Right? We can't get exhausted. And it's going to be, God knows, it is going to be a miserable 6 months. This is going to be the most no-fun election ever.
It's not going to be that miserable. We have a great podcast, comes out every day at 3:30, 45 minutes of joy, respite.
But no rest. No rest, for real. No sleep on this and no giving up. Guys, thank you all for coming out. It means the world to us.